Hey, so is Russell Wilson now officially America's top paid Walmart associate?
I didn't know you're going here right away. $245 million. I think. I wonder if the rest of labor is going to be angry with the amount of money he's making. To answer your question, I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He's officially.
Do you think, for those who are unfamiliar, when we go venture into the world of sports on a book podcast, Russell Wilson is a quarterback for the American football team, the Denver Broncos, the team I support. And the team was just bought by a member of the Walton family who owns Walmart. Does that catch us up?
Yeah, and he's one of the richest, he's the richest NFL owner now.
Yes.
He just bought the Broncos. And so Russell Wilson just signed a $265 million contract today.
What's money, though?
Well, he only gets $165 million guaranteed. So,
do you think that all the new Bronco players have to go through Walmart kind of like HR training?
I do wonder.
You do wonder.
I was on this one of our Patreon episodes, but I just a warning because the Royals were owned by a Walmart guy.
Yeah.
David Glass, he's dead now. It's new ownership. But back in the day, we were owned by a Walmart guy. And I will just warn you, Walmart people have a tendency to be cruel, stingy men with tiny black hearts. You say that. You did just spend a bunch of money to wrap up a pretty good quarterback. So that's a good sign. But our guy refused to spend money for the longest time. We won a World Series, and the year after, the team broke up because he refused to pay for anybody once it became expensive.
Well, your stadium had fountains, right?
We updated the stadium, and we did win a World Series, but I'm inclined to credit the general manager more than...
The fountains are not cheap.
For the city of fountains. Okay. You gotta have water pumps, you know? Anyway, but that's just what I'm saying. Watch out. I don't know anything about this guy. I'm just saying Walmart people, you know...
Are you scared?
No. Okay. I'm just saying
Keep an eye out.
Keep an eye out. We'll get into it on I'm excited about our football Patreon episodes coming up, but we'll get into it, the predictions and all that.
When you get down to it, what's the difference between any of these rich owners?
Not a lot.
Not a lot. Yeah.
Not a lot. Yeah.
They just...
rich people.
They just have different PR, you know.
Yeah. That's a very
PR.
The very appropriate theme for something I want to talk about later. Rich people with good PR and the actuality of the person or their behavior versus the public myth, the legend that is handed down throughout history.
Ooh, I know where you're
going. And then later in the episode, we'll get into mythology in general.
And violence.
Gritty. It's gonna be a good episode, a hodgepodge, a lot of twists and turns. You're gonna be like, whoa, where did that come from?
We go football, we go history, we go mythology. Where are we going? It's there
football.
Will be books.
Russell Wilson. So, do you think Russell Wilson's corny?
Yes.
He's a little corny. Mm-hmm. If he was on my team, I wouldn't care. If I had just gone through 6 years of not making the playoffs because we had a terrible quarterback.
Who cares?
Who cares? You can be corny. You can be whatever.
Just don't commit crimes. And then, yeah, you can be corny.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's just a corny rich dude, but he's not
kind of funny that corny, just the term corny.
Yeah.
You don't see characters in books described as corny, really. Yeah. Do you?
And he is corny, but he's also a professional athlete.
So it doesn't matter.
He do us a lot of physical damage, you know, like he could beat us up and we're calling him corny. Like,
do you think he could beat us up? I mean, we're two strapping guys in our 30s.
He's a professional. Russell Wilson.
Are we not professional athletes? Was that?
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, I agree.
Reading doesn't count as a sport.
I want to say this before we get into the rest of the episode. I did get out a yoga mat about an hour ago, and I did some sit-ups. I did some crunches. I did some push-ups. So I mean,
hey,
I will also add that I have a pretty stiff neck from said workout. So,
but that's all part of it. No pain, no gain.
No pain, no gain. It's gonna be hard reading. I got to pick a reading posture that's not gonna.
You should read while doing sit-ups.
That would be very like Mark Wahlberg-esque, I feel like.
Yeah.
Or like.
Does he read though?
No, but that sounds like what a billionaire would say. Like Elon Musk is like, you know what I do when I do my sit-ups is I read the.
Yeah.
Wall Street Journal.
I read Warren Buffett's.
Pretty good impersonation of Elon Musk. You know what I do when I'm sitting up drilling holes and building flamethrowers? Reading books. That's pretty good.
It's a really good question.
It's pretty good.
They like to multitask.
It's all about multitasking.
Hey, look at you living the vigorous life.
The vigorous. What do you mean? What does that mean?
We'll get to it.
Okay.
Living life with vigor. The man in the arena.
And on that note, welcome to There Will Be Books, a podcast about books and vigor. I am Peter, joined as always by Matt. Right before this episode started, Matt, you said you got a little something special for our fans, and it's a segment. You haven't told me the title of the segment. What's the workshop the title?
But it's I like history. Now and then I'll read a history book. I listened to a pretty good history book just recently, and I kind of wanted to talk about it a little bit.
I
was thinking of doing this going forward every now and then, do a little history segment, a little history lesson. We do Thriller Corner. It was going to be Thriller Corner or History Corner, but it's like, no, too many corners. Go ahead.
The Valley of History.
Maybe.
Come on.
Thought about those Gene Owl books, like the Valley of whatever, at the prehistoric people. I was thinking the Mists of Time, and then you can get some NPR sounding like cheesy sound effects or something. The Veil of History.
The Veil of History.
Yeah.
Okay.
The meat on the bone of history.
Should we lower our collective voices, the volume, to get low? Can we try this out for 30 seconds? Can we act like we are on an NPR podcast or radio station?
Okay.
I just want to try it. Just go with me. We're here with Matt Taylor, and he's going to delve into the Mists of History, a fun new history portion of the podcast. There Will Be Books. We're excited to have you on here, Matt, as a regular contributor, co-host. What are you going to be talking to us about tonight?
Thank you very much for having me, Peter.
Oh.
I'm here to talk about a book by William J. Mann called The War of the Roosevelts.
Oh, I didn't know they fought a war. Did they?
Yeah.
Wow.
Similar to The War of the Roses. I'm just kidding.
Okay. I'm just
kidding. It was more political skirmishes. Yeah. Yeah. How was that?
I think we did it. I think we're pretty good. I can't do that for too long. Pretty good. Anyway. Where's Roosevelt? Okay.
Something like History's Mysteries.
History.
The Veil of Time. Whatever. I'll put it up on a Twitter poll.
History of Mystery.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway.
History Nook.
I think
History Code.
I think that we can't use that word.
Oh, it was Barnes Noble. So
and we worked there a long time ago.
Well, and their little electronic reader.
And they're probably listening right now. So.
Yeah. Well, they do listen.
Should I edit that out? No.
Okay. They have a corporate stooge listen to us taking notes.
Okay. I think we've set this up pretty well. All right.
They look great.
The Roosevelts.
Hey, so what's the first thing that comes to your mind when you hear Teddy Roosevelt gets mentioned? What do you think?
The first thing I think of? I don't want to say.
Why is that?
I think it was mustache.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
That's not bad. I thought you were going to say, like, I think of him naked or something.
Well.
Okay. His mustache.
Yeah, his mustache.
Do you have a mustache? Are we thinking of the right person?
You said Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy Roosevelt. I was workshopping some of what I was going to say with my wife last night, and then half, like 5 minutes in, I realized she was thinking Franklin. We got to make sure we're talking about the same person.
Okay.
Teddy Roosevelt. He was a big...
The older one.
He has a reputation now of being kind of a man's man.
Yeah.
A real tough guy. You know, he... About a big game hunting. He charged up San Juan Hill.
How about this? Really,
yeah.
When I think of Teddy Roosevelt, having not really read a whole lot about Teddy Roosevelt, never, just from like schooling.
Yeah.
I bet he exaggerated a lot of stuff. That's what I would say.
And that's what I want to get into.
Okay.
Right. Because there's, yeah.
Okay.
So over the course of time, I've read a couple of different things about Teddy Roosevelt. And then this new book, The War of the Roosevelts, kind of really drove home. It's like, man, I actually kind of don't like Teddy Roosevelt.
Okay.
He was kind of a morally pompous person. A lot of that tough guy thing was like an act or PR or staged. And so I'll kind of start there. Actually, I reread an essay Gore Vidal wrote about Teddy Roosevelt. And he opens with, I thought it was a pretty funny story. So Vidal was raised by his grandparents for a lot of his childhood. His grandfather was a senator and they lived in Washington, D.C. Okay. And there's his grandmother would always tell a young Gore Vidal a story from when she was little. When Teddy Roosevelt, there was a stream, like a creek in Washington, D.C., Rock Creek, that kind of intersected with the road. And when the creek was shallow enough, horses would pass by on it. And some of his grandmother's friends were, you know, about to cross the creek. And all of a sudden they hear horse hooves come along and a really high pitched voice says, "Out of my way, women, I am the president." Uh-huh. And it's Teddy Roosevelt telling these women to get out of the way. And as he like rode his horse by, he like splashed them and got them all wet.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the Vidal story of and that kind of and that's that that was how he opened his essay.
I like your impersonation.
He made a point to say his high nasally
pitch. You're pretty good. Yeah, okay.
There's not it's very accurate.
Okay.
And there's no way to check but he supposedly had this really high pitched, and then he made a point also he called them women, which is very rude back in the day.
It's rude now too.
You do well, yes. And you didn't call lady, they were lady. You didn't call ladies women.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was that type of thing. And it segs into a lot of his charging of San Juan Hill in the Spanish-American War. It was really called Kettle Hill. He just thought San Juan sounded more romantic. He wasn't like in the initial charge. Another group of soldiers charged and took the hill, and he came up afterwards and took a lot of credit and decided Kettle Hill wasn't romantic, and he changed it to San Juan Hill. A lot of those, he was born a rich kid. He's a rich kid. He played tennis and squash, but he made sure that he was never photographed playing tennis and squash. There's a lot of outdoorsy photos of him in like buckskin with a rifle. Yeah. A lot of those were taken at a New York photography studio.
Oh boy. Teddy's getting
he would go out and hunt
tonight.
But he was very aware of the image. The whole the teddy bear comes from him. And what happened there. And this is detailed in the William Mann book. He was on a hunting trip, and then the people knew that the president was coming. And so they tied up this like old worn down male grizzly bear, like an adult bear, to a tree to make it easier for him to kill. Teddy Roosevelt I don't want to do that because it wasn't sporting. Like, I'm not going to shoot a bear that's just tied up to a tree. A story got out that Roosevelt had been merciful to a bear, and the newspapers played it up like it was he refused to kill a baby bear. And then, you know, the teddy bear started being marketed, and the legend grew out of he spared a bear, but it was an old bear and for different reasons. And but, you know, so that's the myth of the teddy bear. So there's all that stuff I kind of knew. And then this book kind of details when Teddy was young, before he was governor of New York, right on the cusp of his political career. He had a younger brother who had kind of a troubled life, a bit of an alcoholic. His brother, Elliot, fathered a child with the family maid, okay. Right?
Following.
Had the child. Teddy is morally offended. Okay. But he also worries that this is going to, if this ever leaks, it's going to impact his political career, be a scandal, and it'll hurt him politically. And he doesn't trust his brother not to do more stuff like this in the future. And so he tries to get his brother committed to an asylum, which, you know, trying to get your brother committed to protect your political career. And then Elliot's wife wants to stay with him, despite all of that. They have kids together. She's just like, I don't, you know, they didn't call alcoholism a disease or whatever, She's like, not him, you know, whatever, for whatever reason, she wanted to stay with him. Teddy insisted that she get a divorce and that he can't see his kids. Oh. So he gets his brother committed against his will and breaks up the family on moral pretenses, but really to protect his political career.
So, okay. So to start off the myths of history with some myth busting.
Yeah. Well, and like, the fake PR, everybody's got PR and you encourage good legends about yourself to grow. But honestly, breaking up your brother's family to protect yourself, that's a bit like...
Let me ask you some more questions. We got Teddy, but it sounds like the book deals with more than just Teddy Roosevelt. What else is the book? What other Roosevelts? I'm guessing Franklin, Eleanor.
It starts with that.
Okay. Right?
Get y'all fired up about Teddy.
And
then Teddy's younger brother, Elliot, his daughter was Eleanor Roosevelt, right?
Oh, no kidding. Okay.
The Eleanor Roosevelt. There's like three or four different people in that family named Eleanor.
Oh.
Right? But Eleanor Roosevelt, future first lady, is Elliot's daughter. Eleanor Roosevelt is kind of an awkward, gawky kid, doesn't really fit in anywhere, but loves her father. And for all Elliot's faults, he loved her. So it's the only person in her life. Teddy kind of takes him away.
Yeah.
Okay. Right?
What is the relationship
to an asylum between... and she never gets to see him. And then he basically drank himself to death. And you could argue that being away from his family kind of exacerbated his condition. But whatever it is, Eleanor then goes to live with Teddy and his family.
Okay.
Teddy's kid, Eleanor, doesn't really fit in. Kind of made her life worse. She doesn't really fit in. They tease her. She's, you know, there's all these things.
Hmm.
And then they kind of jumps to Franklin's family. Eleanor marries Franklin, which is weird because they're related, but they're fifth cousins.
Okay.
So it's
not.
I wouldn't super, do it.
Yeah.
Their kids turned out fine. You know, it wasn't like too closely related.
Okay. Okay.
But then, so it was fun to kind of, to see how Franklin was from Hyde Park on the Hudson River.
Yep.
And then Teddy's side lived in Oyster Bay. And so there was kind of the wars of the Roosevelts come from the Hyde Park clan versus the Oyster Bay clan. And Eleanor kind of, when she married Franklin, she shifted over to the Hyde Park clan. And Teddy Roosevelt's kids thought they were going to be president. They had political ambitions. Oh, yeah. Their trajectory was govern New York and then going to be president. And Franklin Roosevelt comes along and basically just shoves him out of the way, does that exact same thing, becomes governor of New York, campaigns actively against Teddy Roosevelt Jr. and basically just steals, he earns it.
Yeah.
But he takes all the thunder and now, you know, FDR is kind of the big Roosevelt. So it's kind of like the back and forth battle. It was political and some of it was kind of like high society gossip, but it was a very entertaining book. And if you're into that sort of thing, I recommend The War of the Roosevelts.
It looks like it came out in, I don't know if this is the paperback or the hardcover, came out at the 2016.
I listened to audio.
Okay.
Very well narrated, well written. I ate it up.
It looks very interesting. Do you need to know quite a bit about the Roosevelts going in?
No,
to enjoy you can jump it? Right in.
Okay. This would be a good starting point.
Good starting point. Yeah. All right. I like it.
Half political stuff, half gossip, but not too dense political. Would be fine.
Would you classify it as like popular history or a little bit more?
Yeah, popular. Not in a pejorative way, but pop history.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Not academic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That does sound appealing. The War of the Roosevelts by William J. Mann. Is that right?
Yep. I think J. I might have just added the J.
No, there's J in there.
I have a couple more things on the Roosevelts.
I want to hear them.
All right. So there's a good quote from the Gore Vidal essay, which I liked and kind of sums up the issue with Teddy Roosevelt. Because, you know, a lot of it was PR and stage, but he did go and hunt. He sailed down what's called the River of Doubt in Brazil. Like, he went down to Brazil and actually did some pretty tough guy stuff. It wasn't all
adventure stuff.
Yeah. But so here's the Gore Vidal quote. There is something strangely infantile in this obsession with dice-loaded physical courage when the only courage that matters in political or even real life is moral.
Mm.
Yeah.
I kind of like that quote.
Yeah, physical courage is one thing, but moral courage, doing the right thing no matter the cost, what matters. And I like the dice-loaded term.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of like when a rich guy decides to go, you know, brave it in the wilderness. You're bringing like stagecoaches or trunks and trunks of things. And it's like, you know, it's scary, but it's not like the kid from Into the Wild or anything.
Feels staged in a way.
And it kind of is. Right? So that was a good quote.
Okay.
I think that sums up the issue with Teddy Roosevelt.
So you're down on Teddy?
No, I don't like Teddy.
Don't like Teddy.
I don't think
I like Teddy either.
Nah, man, you can't have your brother committed to get him out of the way so you can rise through the ranks.
I'm going to do a hypothetical question for you. This will be my last question for you. If Franklin, let's say they were reversed age-wise, okay, mm-hmm. and their personalities were the same, who would have succeeded more? Franklin during the time of Teddy Roosevelt's presidency or Teddy Roosevelt during the Great Depression and World War II? I think Teddy would have kind of sounds like been a little bit of a loose cannon with everything.
He would have been a loose cannon. And it's not like Franklin was anti-war. Franklin was angling to get into the war. But I think Franklin would have been better. I think Franklin was he's an interesting, I might have another one of these on him. He's fascinating to me. He and Abraham Lincoln are probably the two presidents that were the most adept at navigating the world of politics or steering the ship of state.
Yeah.
Agree with it, like him or dislike him. He really was. America probably wouldn't have become what we are now, good or bad, without Franklin Roosevelt at the helm. And his whole journey he was a spoiled rich kid, kind of not like mean or sadistic really, but just kind of a mama's boy. Like his mother was, talk about a helicopter parent. Like she was, you know, this close to him. And it took him a while to move on from that. He kind of came into his own. And as he matured politically, he got polio, which probably wound up being good for him in the long run because it steeled his temperament. And there's a whole fashion. There's like a little bit of Henry V type thing to him. And that might just be me personally. I like how he handled things versus Teddy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right.
One more thing. There's a famous line that gets attributed to FDR about Franklin Roosevelt. Have you heard the thing, second class intellect, but first class temperament?
I think so.
There are books about Franklin Roosevelt called, you know, first class temperament. And it's always associated with FDR. Where that quote comes from, Oliver Wendell Holmes, Supreme Court Justice, is supposed to have said that about Franklin. What happened was Oliver Wendell Holmes, as an old Supreme Court justice, had a meeting with Franklin Roosevelt, a young Franklin Roosevelt, right? And as Franklin Roosevelt left, Oliver Wendell Holmes said to either his aide or a journalist or whoever was there to record the story, said, you know, his cousin appointed me to this court. Long pause. Second class intellect, first class temperament. Now, I'm pretty sure he's talking about Teddy, because that was the last thing he had said. His cousin appointed, his cousin being Teddy.
Oh,
his cousin appointed me to this court. Long pause. And then he says the thing about the intellect and temperament. And it that's my little, it's not a conspiracy theory, but that's my, you know, that's more about Teddy than Franklin. Because that really makes more sense for Theodore Roosevelt. Doesn't it? I mean, it's not, and it's the way it was said. I'm pretty sure that's my little thing I'll bug people about at cocktail parties.
I don't think that's coming up too often in cocktail parties, but.
Not nowadays, but fancy sophisticated ones. But that's kind of like, I'll be annoying. Like, no, that's not
Franklin. That's not the right Roosevelt. Stop it.
Doesn't that make sense though?
I'm walking away from you if you do that. If we're ever at a cocktail, I don't know why. We don't
just go up to people.
Hey, you just casually bring up the Roosevelts, and after 30 minutes, someone goes, first class temperament. You're like, no.
I don't know. That was
that's the wrong one.
So. It's more somebody circles up to you and is like, have you seen that? Who's that guy talking about the Roosevelts all the time? It's like, I don't know. I don't know.
You just have the audiobook playing.
Let me show you.
Anyway, all right, Matt, I like that history, like whatever the title is going to be.
The Mists of History. If you have a good title, let us know.
All right.
I like that segment.
Let's transition.
Cocktail Corner.
Kind of abruptly, I would say.
Well, so the myths versus reality is kind of my like college kid.
Are you saying myth? Myths or mist?
Myth.
Oh, I thought you were saying myths.
How myths impact reality.
We are talking about one of our seasonal books that took quite a while for me to get through. You did the audiobook. Yeah. And I will say this. Usually, I have never had a problem with you doing the audiobook. I kind of feel like you cheated here, because this book that we're going to talk about, I feel like would have been easier to listen to just as a purely, like, I'll get into it. We're talking about Black Leopard, Red Wolf by Marlon James. Comes out in 2019, is the first book in a planned trilogy. The second book just came out, I believe, this year.
Yeah.
Highly praised from everything I've gathered. I bought the book when it came out because I read The Book of Night Woman by Marlon James. You've read A Brief History of Seven Killings by Marlon James.
I bought it in hardback when it came out too. I was excited about it.
I had the edition. I have the local independent library, or not library, bookstore I go to. They had a signed first edition, so my hardcover is a signed first edition of said book. I'll give you a couple minutes, Matt. Give me your thoughts on Black Leopard. What were your expectations, and what were your feelings on the book?
Okay, so it was marketed as Game of Thrones in Africa, right? In medieval Africa. And everybody was like, oh, I can't wait. Mm-hmm. It's not that. Turns out it's something else. Turns out that Game of Thrones thing came from Marlon James, and he was joking. He was just kidding, and the joke got taken literally, and, you know, whatever. It is very difficult to read, earthy. I don't want to say vulgar, but there's a lot of like violence and sexual stuff, and just it's very
it goes so far to say part of it's vulgar.
It's vulgar.
It is.
I mean, if you don't like that stuff, this is not for you. It was good. It was well written. I was relieved. I watched some, talks on YouTube of him promoting this book and Q&As and kind of, and he said explicitly, I wanted this to be difficult and confusing for the reader. I wanted them to be adrift. And I was like, I felt a little better. And I was like, okay, well, mission accomplished. But there were really, it's well written. It's in a different dialect. So it's kind of difficult to get into, but he is a very good writer. And it's just, he kind of throws you in to this story. It does take place in medieval Africa, but it's kind of hard to get your bearings. And you do sometimes, and things happen, you're like, oh, that was cool. And then you lose your bearings again, and you're like, wait, what is going on? You know, so there's like, I guess like spots of like, oh, cool, I like this versus this is frustrating. Does that seem?
Yes.
Is that like your experience?
I think, okay. So when I was looking back, actually, I got a little bit more upset when I was thinking back on this book.
Yeah.
Okay. I gave it kind of a middle of the road feeling when I finished it. Like you, there were parts where I was like, I don't really know. It's difficult to read. It's not enticing. It's not. The first 100 pages are like, what is going on? You don't have bearings. You don't really have a plot. You got, I saw someone refer to it as like, just like an extended prologue. It felt like the book then kind of picks up. I don't know if this is a positive, but my favorite parts are when they kind of explain what is going on in the book.
Yeah. Well, because you're so desperate for that.
You're like, desperate for like plot, I guess. Or like, what's the point of what? Here's the basic plot. Our main character is a person named Tracker. And he's being interviewed by a person named the Inquisitor. And Tracker's story is Black Leopard, Red Wolf. You'll eventually find out he groups together with a group of so it's myth fantasy. So there's shapeshifters, there's witches, there's a large variety of different kinds of characters in this book. I don't know how else to put that. There's like vampires. Anyway. They have a mission to find a boy. And essentially that part of the story, and how I think it's kind of Game of Thrones, is this boy is sort of the supposed heir of the kingdom.
Yeah, and he finds that out later. He's called Tracker because, and he's the Red Wolf from the title. He's not literally a wolf. He's not a shapeshifter. Yeah. The leopard, right?
The leopard is the shapeshifter.
The leopard is, but he's called Tracker because once he gets somebody's scent, he can find them anywhere. And so it's basically the whole thing is a journey to find this boy. And he finds out later the boy is that the king's sister's son.
The king's sister's, the king's like, necromancer try to kill him, or I don't know exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff, and there's like three different segments of the, because there's three different journeys, and one of them he finds the boy and it's successful, and then it's 5 years later he's got to go find him again,
which is odd storytelling.
And he's telling it, he's at the end, I mean, I guess spoilers, but I think you'll find it doesn't really matter if you read this thing, but he's been arrested for the murder of the boy, and he's telling this story to the person he calls Inquisitor,
yeah.
At the end. So the whole book is his telling his version to the Inquisitor. And so it's a good premise for a story.
I have a quote from Marlon James talking about kind of the book. Okay. And what his like background. Because one, it's no secret how much I love sci-fi, fantasy, and crime, so-called genre fiction. I've never been shy about that, and that's the stuff I grew up with. But if you're going to write with the Caribbean and the African, you're going to subtract the Western worldview. And then the stuff that they keep calling magical realism is real. And even with all that, I had to do some serious mental house cleaning, because even when people write about mythology and witchcraft and so on, they still write from this Judeo-Christian point of view, and that's not really real. So a lot... I don't know, when I was doing the research and there's a lot of dialogue about excluding like writing a fantasy book from a different point of view in a way.
Yeah.
Where all these characters, I guess, in the book are from African mythology in different areas and they're real. I didn't really have a problem with that. I think my issues come about with how much he tries to obstruct everything in a shroud of like, I think sometimes it can be overly written. I think it can be obtuse. I think there's some really, really cool and interesting aspects to the book. I'll say this, the book is like full of like violent and sex. I didn't, at first I was like, whoa, this is unusual. I don't, that was not the reason why I was like, oh, I don't like this book. If you read reviews on like, let's say Goodreads, half of the negative reviews, they couldn't finish the book because of the violence and the sexual violence, the, just everything about that. So just know that going in. It's kind of crazy that this
book, there's a lot of it. It's like,
I think people are buying this book and starting this book. Just, I think they're, it's not typically a book that they would kind of read, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's,
yeah, it can be shocking.
It's not a how do I put this? Just like a,
like if you're
almost like fan fiction. Like this is not, this is, you are tested as a reader.
Yeah. You're,
I saw someone say like, every time I picked it up, and when I put it back down, I never felt like, oh, I want to like pick that up soon after.
Well, I mean, if you're in charge of buying books for your church library,
do not buy this book.
Don't buy this book.
I liked the thing. Okay, so some talks about this. It's a, the mythology. Did you feel that there's almost too much in this? Like, there's too many characters. There's too much. I felt there was too much like evil forces, and all, there's just I wish he was like focused on a handful. Let's say five instead of 12. Because
even if it was a lot or 12 or whatever, part of me wishes it was more linear and straightforward, like a story I can wrap my head around. But actually, looking back on it, watching and reading the interviews with him, I think I get where he's coming from.
Okay.
If I don't understand the book itself, he was talking about how a lot of African mythology relies on, or the narrator is usually the trickster.
Yeah.
It's always kind of a theme or inherent in a lot of those stories, is you can't trust the narrator at all because they're a trickster. And if you grew up with that sort of mythology, you would know that. So we're coming at it from like a Western mythology. Yeah. And I think that's where the Game of Thrones thing, people are expecting, I was expecting a more straightforward, like Fellowship of the Rings type journey. Like, okay, these people are on a quest and we'll hit all the beats of the quest. And we didn't get that. We got a kind of disjointed book where you can't really trust something's up with the narrator, he's not really trustworthy. And so I think a lot of it stems from that. And maybe I find him a likable person. In Brief History of Seven Killings was so good.
Yeah.
Willing to give him the benefit of the doubt and assume, okay, so this might have been over my head versus a bad book that I don't like. I think there's something there, but I'm just not equipped to grasp it right now.
I think I will blame myself for like how I read this book. I did not read it, and I feel like I also think part of, if I be honest, like part of that's kind of the book too in me. Like if the book is just like, I don't know.
That's okay.
I think this is you can find a lot of like critical essays talking about this book, about truth and the nature of, kind of like the differences between how our expectations are versus what the kind of African mythology storytelling is. So it feels hard to like criticize it when someone could just be like, well, you don't understand like the background of it. If that makes sense.
True. Yeah. Well, but that's kind of,
so it's a tough one to kind of,
It made me feel better when he said it's meant to be. He wanted the reader adrift. It was meant to be difficult. I was like, okay, well, good. And I wonder how much of that is, we are kind of rooted in the expectations of like our Western myths and stories, which is fine. But I mean, he talked about Tolkien. He had to run like a spell check. He said his final draft, he ran a spell check on it, like a computer program, to take out any sort of Tolkienisms. Like, he's trying to make it like, in the same way Tolkien is rooted in English or Northern European mythology, like it's steeped in that, he wanted this book to be steeped in the old African mythology. And to do that, you got to go back before the slave trade and all the cultures intersected. And so he really made an effort to strip it of our Western mythology and the assumptions
therein.
But that can also be like, okay, well, that's why it's so difficult for us steeped in the Western mythology to grasp. Right.
In another interview I saw, he says like the Odyssey and the Iliad were important to him in writing this.
Yeah. Well, he said he loves Tolkien. He's just saying he wanted it. It's not like he hates Tolkien and he's doing it because of that. He's just saying, if it's going to be, I want to write a thing that's true to kind of medieval African mythology, it's going to be severed from Western mythology and it's going to read very difficult and jarring to Western cultures.
Yeah.
So I think that's it's the first one in the trilogy I'm willing to kind of, and like I say, he's a good writer. So it's like, okay, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt here.
I really wanted to love this book. I want to say that. Like,
yeah.
The violence was like, okay, he's going for it. Like the violence, everything else is like, okay, he's just being openly. I saw this thing in the interview I saw where he sent it to the publisher and his agent was like, oh, they love it. And kind of like, ironically, I guess his agent was like, oh yeah, I mentioned like Wakanda and like Black Panther a lot, which I thought was like, okay, like that's how they sold the book, I guess.
Yeah,
and their publisher was just like, Marlon James, like they didn't mention any of the queerness to it all. Like it's kind of like homoerotic in a lot of aspects. It's like, no, not really. And he's like, okay. And I think that's all like very interesting. Like it adds an element to the fantasy story that's I enjoy. I like when an author surprises me. I just wish that they were so afraid of, I'm not afraid, but like, I don't know. It just felt, I can never find, and when I found myself in the story, I'm like, oh, I'm liking this. The next part would pull me out and I would get disinterested I don't know. It was a interesting read, I would say this. I'm curious if people have read this, listening to this, and what their thoughts were on it. What were their expectations? Because some people, I think it's a divisive book. Either people love it or kind of
hate it.
Not hate it, but I think some people do hate the book. I'll be completely honest with you.
I stumbled on a podcast. I listened to about 10 minutes of it, and it was a bunch of, I'm going to say early 20s girls who hated it.
Okay.
It was kind of funny to listen to.
The reasons why it disappointed me was the elements were there. I don't know if the execution was what I would have liked, which is that's my issue. But like the backstory between like the kids he kind of saves, I thought that was really interesting. Mm-hmm. The journeys, I think some of the settings are really interesting, although I kind of felt like I never fully grasped any of them. There's like a city in a tree, if I remember correctly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing with where was it, they went into this place and the walls were all different and they like broke through the walls and there was like a kid inside the walls,
yes,
people, puppets. That was creepy
and really, yes, well done. So there were elements that were just like, sure, really interesting, I think. But I was telling you earlier, like when he's explaining what's going on, I thought that was a bad sign where I was like, oh, I like this part because I have a bearing of what the story is.
It's like you're lost to sea and there's a little drift log. You're like,
okay. Yeah.
But see, is that intentional? Is like, that's what we keep coming back to. And I'm kind of with you because it was frustrating to read, but it's like, okay, well, maybe this is kind of the point.
Yeah. I don't know.
But I don't know.
Sometimes I like that. Like part of me is like, okay, I like the fact that this mainstream, like popular fantasy book is bringing up all these things in my head. But other parts, I'm like, I don't know if I have the mental time to think about all this stuff. And that's my fault, right? That's my issue. But I don't know. I started reading some academic essay from a professor about why like this, the narrator as truth is a false thing, and I was like, I can't do this anymore. I can't read literary criticism theory, but it hurts my brain when I'm doing this at Yeah.
Hey,
after 8 hours in a warehouse.
Well, the academic, a lot of academic literary criticism, is especially, isn't really, would argue, it's not written to be understood.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's meant to be obscure. Mm-hmm. But I found the second book on CD at the library and I checked it out, and I'm a couple of discs in. And I will say it's a little, I don't know if I'm just used to it or it's a little more comprehensible.
Are you talking about the second book?
Moon Witch Spider King. I got that on audio.
So from what I gather, that is a more linear story.
Well, and it starts that way. It's from, remember Sogalon?
Yeah.
One of the witches, witch or anti-witch, but one of the characters in this story, it's from her point of view.
Okay.
And it kind of, the narrative kind of starts off with her, because in the book she's supposed to be 300 some years old. In this book, it starts with her as a child, and she's kind of like, it's more palatable to my like Western mythology. She's a young child who doesn't fit in with her family. Her mother died in childbirth. You know, her brothers pick on her and say, oh, you killed my mother. And then her parents die and she's sent to a brothel, but she uses kind of witchcraft to get out of sleeping with the men. And it's like more of a like, okay, I can see where this story is progressing. And you know, she's going to become the witch from Black Leopard. And like I say, I'm only a few discs in, but it's smoother sailing for me.
Yeah. From what I gather,
I'm curious where it goes.
Yeah. From what I gather, from just reading what people have said about the book, it's more accessible, the second book.
Yeah.
The third book, apparently, he's described as like a horror. So basically, this main story that we kind of briefly, all three books are going to be like a telling of that story, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's the same story told by three different people. So I'm wondering if it might not be worth, not immediately, but finishing the trilogy and maybe... I was thinking maybe we'll understand Black Leopard, Red Wolf the long way around if you read the other two and you're like, oh, okay, I get the gist of the story. And
I can see a world, okay, where I will look back on myself right now, 2022, and this, reading this, and like say, oh, you were stupid. You didn't get it.
Maybe that's the point. Maybe things will become clear. Like, I'm curious about how the Sogalon story goes in Moon Witch Spider King. And then the third one, I may or may not remember this correctly, but it might take place from the point of view of the Inquisitor. And then once you kind of get the gist of the story, you come back and read this again in 5 years.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, okay, I get it now. Maybe it's an unfinished piece of art and we just need the other pieces.
I think... If that's a possibility, that's like remarkable, like planning and like pulling.
Well, see, or maybe it'll just work out that way, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's just the way.
That's true. Sometimes you don't have to do like 10 years of planning on this stuff. You just kind of like, actually, this fit pretty well.
So here's the thing. Hopefully he doesn't get bit by the long awaited finale to a fantasy series. And it just takes 15 years for him to finish the third one.
But Marlon James is
pretty on top of it.
Yeah.
And like I said, half of this is I like him as a person. He's an engaging guy, good writer. So I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Be like, okay, maybe I didn't understand this properly because he's too good a writer just to, just to throw something bad out there.
But I agree with all that, and I feel, I don't know if I would want to read the second book right away after this.
Yeah, I think we'll take some time.
But I still feel confident right now in some of my criticisms of the book.
Sure.
Like the first 90 to 100 pages are just not good in a way. Like it's too confusing and difficult. Like you're like, I have no emotional, I'm not getting drawn into this at all, really.
Well, see, I kind of got lost in the middle. I was like, okay, these people are coming at me kind of fast. The beginning,
yeah,
like, okay, the tracker finds out the people he thought were his parents or his grandparents. Okay, you know, there's a pretty cool dream sequence
But then, I thought that could be like 20 pages, and it's like almost 100 pages.
Yeah.
Of a 600 and some page book. I don't know. But yeah, some section in this book where I highlighted it, and I was like, oh, that's really, I mean, maybe I like violence. And this is like this is very dark. Mm-hmm. I thought in my head, like, this is like NC-17 type stuff. Like, you should not let your 12-year-old kid read this book, I don't think.
Yeah, he won't make it past page 5.
But they won't. I don't know if they understand it. We didn't really understand it.
Be careful if they're flipping through. Yeah, there's some.
Because it's graphic stuff. But that wasn't really like my issues with the book. Those are just kind of like, oh, observations. This is an extremely violent, sort of disturbing story. I just wish that the elements were used a little bit more, with a little bit more editing, I guess, in a way. I don't know. But then we go back to the story, the question of, is that the point that he was going for? Like the story he's trying to tell is supposed to not have those elements. So it's
supposed to be different.
Because
you're wired. He's trying to change your wiring.
I think Marlon James will come back to him on the podcast at some point.
He will. I'm going to try to get him on the show.
Okay, there we go.
We'll see. I'm going to at him on Twitter.
I think he's going to think we're just not very smart.
Yeah, he's pretty big time. Yeah, but here's the thing. I'm hoping to like the Teddy Roosevelt stuff. And so when I was watching interviews with him, he's an interesting guy. He like really likes Jane Austen. There's one interview he was doing with some British guy, and Marlon James kind of got going on how brilliant Jane Austen was. And he's like, if you read Pride and Prejudice, you'll find. And the British guy just cut him off. He's like, no, let's get back to. And I was like, oh man. Like, so the pitch to Marlon is, we won't ask you about movie versions of this. We won't ask you to explain this. Come on and talk about Jane Austen or We Have Always Lived in the Castle. Like, we'll talk about whatever you don't get to talk about on tour because everyone's asking you these dumb celebrity questions. We'll actually talk about what you want to talk about. There's a book you never get to talk about. That's what we'll do here. We'll ask you the gossipy stuff. So that's going to be my pitch to him. And if he agrees to come on, we'll have to turn around and read Moon Witch Spider King.
This book was... the rights were sold, I think, before it was published or right around when it was published by Michael B. Jordan. Oh,
yeah. Not the basketball player, the
actor. Fine actor.
And Wallace.
How do you feel about a movie adaptation of this book?
I'd watch it because maybe it'd make things a little clearer.
I think they would cut a lot and just focus on, like I said, like the basic element of the story is not that like unique. But
would they have to edit it in such a way to where the journey is more linear?
Yes, they would.
I'd watch it. I'd be curious.
I don't think Marlon James would like it because I think it would stray quite a bit from the intent of.
And is it a series or a movie?
I think it's a movie. Well, I don't think there's. I don't.
No, you could develop
it. I don't think they're very close to like developing it.
I'd watch it though. Is my thing. I would watch it. I'd be curious. Maybe it'd make things a little clearer to my dumb Western brain.
That's why I got back to him. I was like, am I just dumb? Like, am I? But
it's a very real possibility for both of us.
Very real possibility.
Every now and then when we read something really serious, we're like, oh, maybe we're just dumb.
I felt like that a little bit during this. I felt dumb reading Dorothy Dunnett. Like, I was like,
yeah,
her vocabulary is much better than mine. Like, in a very, like, apparent way.
Are we just dumb millennials?
Are we just dumb?
Like, they used to write dense back in the day and we're barely staying afloat. Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like, we don't know another language. We don't know Latin. Like, we just, I don't know. It's kind of depressing. Anyway.
Just English. And even then, barely.
All right. Do you have any last thoughts on Black Leopard, Red Wolf?
Can I tell you, I like the attitude that he brought to it. Did you read about the kind of what spurred this, the origins of this story?
It kind of came after, what, it was like 2015 you got the idea?
Right? Well, no, 2010, it was like when The Hobbit came out. And they announced the casting. And he said he had a friend. And Marlon James is like, oh, I bet there's going to be, you know, just all white cast. And his friend was like, well, yeah, it's Tolkien. It's, you know, based on European mythology. Of course it's going to be. And Marlon James is like, it's made up. You can do whatever you want. It's not going to be a big deal. And he went back and forth with his friends on the casting of The Hobbit. And Marlon James finally just said, you know what? Keep your Hobbit. I'm going to go do my own thing. Which I actually really like that attitude. Like, rather than just complaining about what other people do with their work. So, you know what? I'm going to go do my own thing. And it turned into this trilogy based on African mythology. So it actually kind of made me think of, or go ahead.
No, I was just, I saw something, a quote vaguely based on this. And it was like different cultures or whatever. And it's, I guess my end point would be like, we should have more like different cultures. We kind of get like the Viking or whatever, like instead of like putting African-American characters in a Viking story, why don't we just tell the,
you'd have more stories,
stories from Africa. Like, why don't we just have those? Like, those should be in our kind of mythology stuff. So I think I agree with that. Like, you can, instead of just force casting, just be like, actually tell the stories instead of just
being some like, that takes place in,
instead of trying to like have a diverse cast, but when it's a, you know, an old Irish,
it's jarring if it's like medieval Ireland. Yeah.
But so that's, you know, just, no, I'm going to tell a story that's been told for centuries in like from, you know, from a much different point of view. So I agree. I think that is a much more engaging way to go about it, right?
Exactly, exactly. And I also really like the attitude that I'm going to go create my own thing.
It's true, yeah.
It reminded me of, in David Mamet's book, Three Uses of the Knife, he kind of talks about that. He talks about it in the context of Shakespeare. He calls the people who doubt that Shakespeare really wrote all the plays anti-Stratfordians, right? Because Shakespeare was from Stratford, whatever. But he's like, these people dwell on, they use the, dwelling on who wrote Shakespeare is kind of a pretext to keep them from engaging with the work themselves.
Yeah.
Or even going on and trying to create something as good, even if you're not going to succeed. So he uses that kind of the Stratfordian, anti-Stratfordian thing as a way to say, a way to point out how people use criticism to avoid engaging with the art itself or creating their own art. That's right. True. That's kind of Mamet's point. And I thought of that with the keep your Hobbit thing. But, and that's the attitude, right? You can, I'll go off and I'll do my own thing, rather than just criticizing this other thing for not being what I want it to be.
Good point.
I think a lot of people, especially in the internet culture, take that to heart. Don't just this, hey, this thing, this book, this movie isn't what I want it to be. Okay. But it, you can't just dwell on that. Engage with stuff you do like, or go create your own.
I think you know, also
harness that energy to create it, harness that creative energy, because it'll just destroy you if you just hate on things all the time. That can't just be your personality to rag on everything you don't like.
Good. Why?
So I enjoyed the origin story.
Okay.
All right. I do want to point out, he doesn't even hate, he likes Tolkien. He said he loves Lord of the Rings and all that. It's just his own. It's like, I'm going to go do my own fantasy series.
I like it. Cool. So yeah, it was, definitely an experience, but not one where I'm going to say I'm writing. Obviously, Marlon James, I'm still going to want to read his books. And at some point, we'll get to the second and possibly third and see if there's a just a bigger picture that we're not seeing right now.
And you would love you'd love Brief History of Seven Killings.
Okay. Like that. I do have that book, and it's been on my TBR for years. So
it's like American Tabloid in Jamaica.
There you go.
It's great.
Let's talk about our TBR. What do we got? What are we reading on There Will Be Books? I have a document here. So we just did Black Leopard, Red Wolf. Let's talk about our monthly reads. Upcoming, we have Flash for Freedom, the third book in the Flashman series. This one, I just finished it the other day. McDonald kind of gets a little close to the third rail. You're like, oh, is he losing his touch? He pulls through. Old Flashman is, you're like, oh, do I hate Flashman right now? And then you're like, okay.
It's the stickiest one yet.
It's the stickiest one yet. You're like, oh man, he might just be bad. He just might be bad. And then I'm like, oh, okay. So we'll be talking about that. We have Midsummer's Night's Dream, speaking of Shakespeare. We have Cult Classic, a new book, a new release, which we don't often do on the movie books, by Sloane Crosley. I don't have the book in front of me. Is that the author's name right, Matt? Yeah, Sloane Crosley. Halfway through that book.
Hey, me too.
And I can see why you like it.
Yeah,
I like a lot of it, and a lot of it I'm like, oh, do I not like this book? So I'm enjoying the book. I'll just say that.
That'll be good content.
Yeah, it's a fun back and forth I'm having. There are some things she does where I'm like, oh, that's brilliant. That's funny. Really funny book too. Other parts where I'm like, I've come up with this term where authors get stuck in the echo chamber. I'm trying to like workshop what that means, but basically like, they get into a mode where they're just like talking as if they're on like making a point on Twitter where everyone who follows them thinks like them. Does that make any sense? I don't know.
No, I know what you mean. In a lot of literary fiction that takes place where the characters are all writers and editors.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't quite see that here. We'll get into it.
I got to a point where I like the story kind of shifted. I was like, oh, actually I like this risk that she took. Anyway,
no, and I like it. It's not just her. It's not Otto. Like takes place from a character, but there's other characters that are fleshed out. It's not just one character moping around New York. There's a panoply. Is that the right word? Other characters.
There you go.
That isn't just a stand-in for the author.
On our Patreon, our Facebook book is 8 Men Out. I'm going to mention Life and Fate, like I said, but we're probably going to be discussing that book in 2023. I'll be perfectly honest with you. But The Once and Future King, I'm making progress on that. That is excellent. Yeah. If you've been kind of not a huge Arthurian fan or anything like that, pick this book up. It is hilarious. It is fun. It is adventurous. It's enjoyable. So that's a kind of our longer seasonal, but I think what we're going to do is split. It's 4 books, I believe, and we'll split it up into each book per se. So, I think that's all that's on our TBR. Am I missing anything? I don't think so.
No, yeah. August is Cult Classic. Yeah. We're probably going to add a September book. Here soon. We're going to, I got a fantasy football league starting.
Yes.
Hey, so if you're listening to this like within a couple days of it coming out, let me know. We got a couple slots open and we're gonna do a bookish type fantasy football league. The name of my team, guess what the name of my team is, Peter?
I didn't even look. You told me. I didn't look at it.
Oh. Dak Leopard Gene Wolf. It's a take on this book here. So it's literary names, maybe literary bookish prizes and punishments.
There you go. The hot dog straw
is either going to be the reward or punishment or just something everybody has to do. Hot dog straw.
We got a lot of stuff, we got a lot of content. You'll catch us here. If you want to listen to more content from us, go over to our Patreon and you can sign up for a little change there and support us that way. And we have book reviews over there, we got podcasts over there. So
we do sports, we do a thriller book. It's like a continuing thriller corner. We choose a thriller. We're about to vote on a new thriller to read.
That reminds me, I have to put in my votes for that. So we have content coming out all over the place. Get in contact with us, send us your thoughts on social media, Instagram, all that fun stuff. So until next time, we'll talk to you later.
Bye.